It's nice to be with friends, familiar faces. Just sitting, I was thinking how special it is to have practiced together for so many years, and to I was just thinking about the chanting. You know, when we started the Quaker meetings, how the chanting was pretty scratchy, and now we all know the chanting, and it's just so easy. And so it's very, very, very special to be a part of a group that loves the Dhamma, that has high moral values, it has a kind of contemplative spirit, reflective mind. This is very, very special. And so that's the life of Sangha. So we have a schedule, which is pretty basic. Sort of like, people always ask me, well, when are you going to talk and when are you going to meditate? And I just say, well, we'll just sort of fill in the blanks as we go. But basically what I like the session before breakfast, and you have a session between breakfast and lunch, another afternoon session, evening session. So you have kind of four sessions of formal practice where you can really work on your meditation object and be very much with yourself. The whole retreat is to be with yourself. But if you see those opportunities, like an afternoon session where it goes from 2 to 5, so that's like 3 hours of just really determining to do formal practice for a longer span of time, and then do those chunks of time, you'll find it very, I mean, you already know, you've done retreats, but just to make those determinations, okay, now I can just do formal practice, and now put away my plans and my projects and my monastery, which is hard for me. There's so much going on right now. But to develop determination in your practice is very, very important. And part of the structure of a retreat is we have the timetable, but we also have the 8 precepts. And the 8 precepts are a way of developing determination. The 8 precepts, as you know, are both they're both around moral restraint and also sense restraint. So part of the 8 precepts are moral, and part are just renunciant precepts. So as we take those precepts, as is our custom, remember what you're developing is the what we call Adhitana Bharami, or the virtue of determination to live in a certain way for a certain period of time, and keep to certain boundaries. And of course, that's my monastic life is very much structured in that way, where we have schedules and boundaries and limits and etiquettes and all manner of things which help me to be more mindful and to also be the member of a community. So these boundaries that we set up and the program that we follow also are developing a communal sensitivity. And a retreat's interesting that way. It's very individual, isn't it? And you just, with your whatever material presents itself in your practice, but you're also with a group, and there's both a sensitivity to the group, and also there's an individualism in that. And so the structure of the retreat also helps the retreat not to become a too overly social function. So things like noble silence, limitations on food, limitations on entertainment, really contains the retreat that way. And so, I mean, you're all aware of that, but it's just good to be reminded of that. I don't know how many times I've done this refuges and 8 precepts talk, but it's very important actually to understand these structures that we have. So somewhere in here we'll have 8 precepts.
75.
And just to remind you, the formula that we use is we begin by paying homage to the Buddha. And for me, as I always say, homage to the Buddha is a deep sense of gratitude for the teacher. So for me, I've been very fortunate in living this life not just the Buddhism, but also monastic Buddhism, and it's been very obviously very important in my life. So when I pay homage to the Buddha, when I bow, I love Buddha images, I love pictures of the Buddha, I have this always this triggering to gratitude. There's a sense of gratitude for having this life. So when we pay homage, that's a part of it. That's one way that I use it. And then the other is the realization that as human beings we have the possibility of a transcendent realization, deeply peaceful, deeply compassionate, transcendent realization, which we call enlightenment in Buddhism. And so the homage to the Buddha for me is also that there is this possibility in human consciousness, and this being attained that and shared that with us. So I always ask, you know, do you have that sense? Do you have that sense that in our consciousness, in our human birth, there is this possibility of, whether you call it transcendence, enlightenment, or whatever, do you have that aspiration? Is it important in your life? Is it how does it relate to your ordinary worldly life? So obviously for me it's tremendously important, and yet I work pretty hard in my worldly life. I do that too, but that transcendent is always it's like a beacon that I'm always drawn to, the literature around it, and so Buddha images also represent that for me, the enlightenment. So the Buddhism isn't just good meditation techniques or good moral values or good methods of training the mind. There is an underlying purpose to it, and that purpose is the realization of Nibbana, end of suffering. So that's how I use the phrase Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Sammasambuddhassa. And then the three refuges: homage to the Buddha, homage to the Dhamma, homage to the Sangha. I take refuge in the Buddha, I take refuge in the Dhamma, I take refuge in the Sangha. Then the awake mind, right? The Buddha is the awake, so that's a meditative principle, that's a contemplative principle, that when we are truly present to the way things are, that's Buddha. So if you really know what's going on in your mind now, that's it. If you're thinking about, did I lock the door or not? I can't remember. Or whatever you're thinking about, then you're lost in that particular configuration. So just the awake mind. So simple. It's so simple. And yet, and it's always here. It's just so beautiful. If you think about it, awake, it's always here. You know, it's like you don't have to go to Galilee. It's nice to do it at Galilee, but all the time. All the time, awake. So that word Buddho, Buddha, becomes, you know, it has all these different meanings and perspectives. It's a very rich word. Dharma is truth of the way things are. It's truth, and the way things are just the way they are now. That's Dharma. It's really very same as Buddha, really. Just whatever it is this way now. And that's so, it seems so, yeah, of course. What else could it be? But actually to recognize that this moment is the way it is, just the way it is, to be awake to it and accept it, is Buddha knowing Dharma. So again, if you're feeling cold, say, I don't feel kind of warm and cold, it's really quite nice. And you just know, it's coldness is this way. Just the way, that's the Dharma of coldness, Buddha knowing Dharma. If you start worrying, oh, did I bring a sweater, or is it going to be cold, you start worrying, whatever, then you're lost in thought. Buddha knowing Dharma. And that's very profound, actually. That model of Buddha knowing Dharma is actually very, very profound. It just seems so, we do it perfunctorily as Buddhists, take refuge, but it really is a refuge, it really is. Even if you feel rot, like I had last week, I had these attacks of, why did I ever start this monastery? It's just like, it was so busy, so complex, just this building and people coming and people's problems and financial stuff, and you know, like so much coming at me, and I had a kind of an attack of, why did you ever start this? Really quite strong. You could have retired. And it was so very strong, and I just said, yeah, this is what it feels like to not to want to be here. And I just had to stick with it. I really had to stick with it. Stuck with it. Next day's fine. Not a problem. Oh, what a nice place. But that, you get the furies coming through you, don't you? It comes through you. And if you understand refuge, you can take it all. You know, you can, you know. Not that I mean, I advise you all to retire, actually. I tell Chunda now, constantly, I tell them too, I say, if I ever threaten to start another monastery, take me back and shoot me. But it's interesting, something like that, you know, something really quite strong comes up. It's after 40 years of practice. And you know, I'm pretty diligent. It just comes up in your mind. And then, you know, the whole thing is, okay, how do I use this for practice? How do I use this to get stronger rather than, oh, my practice is down the tube? Right? What is it about this moment that's teaching me, rather than, you know, I should have made these other decisions 10 years ago, 5 years ago, or something. No, it's this way now, the Buddha knowing Dharma. And it's that kind of, we call it ujjupatipanno, the kind of direct practice on whatever's happening to you, where you get so much strength. You get so much strength, because that's what's being presented, isn't it? You know, that's what I have to learn from. So Buddha knowing Dharma, you really try to see the profundity of that, and try to see that that is your refuge. That really is your refuge. And then Sangha is the practice. Sangha is it's translated as group. So you have Bhikkhu Sangha, Bhikkhuni Sangha, and you have Arya Sangha, different ways that we talk about that. But what it points to is the work. You know, it's the doing of precepts, it's the doing of diligent meditation day in and day out, it's the doing of right speech, it's the doing of right action and all the rest of it. It's how we live in the world according to principles of truth, beauty, and compassion. So it's the doing. Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha. So let's say I wanted to strangle the building inspector yesterday. He came and he makes us take out a sink because of an inch and a half. It was off code, inch and a half. So this deep sense of murder arose in me. May you have a flat tire. So, and what is Sangha? It's like, no, you don't pursue hatred. I'm being a bit over-exaggerated here, but you practice right speech, right? You don't like rubbish the guy, although we got into a bit of wrong speech there, but that's what you do all the time, isn't it? You know, life presents itself in ways you don't want. That's natural. So I'll probably send them a box of chocolates after this. So Buddha, Dhamma, Sangha, I don't know, for me they just become more profound. The more I live this life, the more I, you know, contemplate that awake mind and Dharma just the way it is, and the doing, living my life in the spiritual practice just becomes more and more strong. It's such a simple model. So we take refuge, and then the 8 precepts. I take the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature, so non-violence, and its opposite is, of course, compassion. I take the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given, so impeccability in that area, and its opposite is generosity. I take the precept to refrain from any kind of sexual activity. So on a retreat, it's celibacy, and rather than fidelity in relationships. In the 5 precepts, it's fidelity in relationships. So that's a renouncing precept. It's not a moral precept. It's just simplifying things. Imagine like monasticism as if we all had partners. Morning meetings would be... You just can't do monasticism and have a partner. You either do marriage or you do monasticism, right? But all of us are attracted, like whether you're a celibate or you're not a celibate, we're still attracted by sexual energies, by the opposite sex or whatever preferences one has. Those are still natural energies. And you can learn about them in a celibate form, or you can learn about it in a relationship. You still have to learn about it, don't you? You still have to understand what that is in human consciousness and what it is in terms of liberation. So that third precept and the eighth precepts is just to simplify things. Musavada, and take the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech. So we try to practice noble silence, and noble silence is really kind of guarding your space and guarding other people's space. So if you're feeling you want to talk, really think, well, does this person really need to hear you? So better to talk. If you have a Dharma question, ask me, or if there's a logistical problem. Evelyn, are you the manager? Yeah, so...
Chris and I.
And Chris,
everything's
yeah.
Everything's written.
Okay, you have a method. Yeah. So the more we can practice noble silence, the better. Very helpful. And I won't be practicing noble silence. So, because I'm teaching, it's pretty hard for me to all of a sudden turn it all off. I just can't do that. So if I'm talking to people down the hallway, just ignore me. Right? So once I, and when you're teaching, you're just in a kind of teaching mode. But I'll try to be quiet. outside of here. I take the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs which lead to carelessness. So sobriety. I take the precept to refrain from eating at inappropriate times. So again, eating at, having a hamburger at midnight is not immoral. It's just simplifying our lives with the eating times that we have. I take the precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment. There's nothing wrong with adornment and beautification. There's nothing wrong with entertainment. It's just we're simplifying things. I like to tell the story of my mother, and I found that if I could get her a nice piece of clothing on the internet, it made her really happy. So there's a place for that. There's a place for beauty and adornment. I could, like my mother having the... What was his name? She had the greatest hairdresser. A really lovely character. What was his name? Anyway, he used to come every 2 weeks, and it made her so happy. And she did this kind of, every, 3 months, she did this torture where they put all those chemicals on your head, and what is it, a perm? It's a perm, is it? Oh, God, I almost died from the toxins. She loved it. And it made her so happy. So there's a place for that. It's not wrong. But I've had the same outfit for 42 years, so she was very disappointed with me. And entertain beautification and adornment. I undertake the precept to refrain from lying on a high or luxurious sleeping place. So what's all that about? It's basically not just spending all your time sleeping. That's all it's really about. Luxury, those kinds of things. So most of you are familiar with the formula. Shall we do the precepts as we do, as is our custom? Just make a determination now for this period of time to live by these principles, to live by the noble silence, and to follow the schedule and just to try to be diligent with that. So you're setting up Adhitana Parami, the determination in the mind to live in a certain way. Let's start with the Pali where you ask. I'll do it word by word. And you just follow me word by word. Up on the top of page 74. Top of 74. Yeah, that's the request. I'll do the Pali. Mayang Bhante.
Mayang Bhante.
Tisaranena.
Saha
Atta
Silani Yajama
Dutiyampi
Mayang Bhante
Tisaranena Saha Atta Silani yajama.
Silani yajama.
Tatiyampi.
Tatiyampi.
Mayangbante.
Mayangbante.
Tisarnena.
Tisarnena.
Sahaata.
Sahaata.
Silani yajama.
Silani yajama.
I'll chant Namo Tassa three times, and then when I finish, you chant three times. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa.
Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa. Namo Tassa Bhagavato Arahato Samma Sambuddhassa.
Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Buddhang saranang gacchami.
Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Dhammang saranang gacchami.
Sanghang saranang gacchami.
Sanghang saranang gacchami.
Duttiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami.
Duttiyampi buddhang saranang gacchami.
Duttiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Duttiyampi dhammang saranang gacchami.
Duttiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi buddhang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi dhammang saranam gacchami. Tatiyampi sanghang saranam gacchami. Tisarana gamanang nititang. That's it. And the next we'll do the Pali. I'll do it word by word. And then I'll do the English all in one line. Panatipata. Veramani. Sikapadang. Samadhyami. I undertake the precept to refrain from taking the life of any living creature. Adinadana.
Adinadana.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadang.
Sikapadang.
Samadhyami.
Samadhyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from taking that which is not given. Abrahmacharya.
Abrahmacharya.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadang.
Samadhyami.
And take the precept to refrain from any kind of sexual activity.
I undertake the precept to refrain from any kind of sexual activity.
Musawada.
Musawada.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadang.
Sikapadang.
Samadhyami.
Samadhyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech.
I undertake the precept to refrain from false and harmful speech.
Surameraya.
Suramiraya.
Maja.
Maja.
Pamadatana.
Pamadatana.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadang.
Sikapadang.
Samadhyami.
Samadhyami.
And take the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs, which leads to carelessness.
I undertake the precept to refrain from consuming intoxicating drink and drugs, which leads to carelessness.
Vikala bhojana.
Veramani.
Sikapadang.
Samadhyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from eating at inappropriate times.
Nacha
Gita.
Vadita.
Visukadasana.
Visukadasana.
Malaganda.
Malaganda.
Vilepana.
Tarana.
Mandana.
Mandana.
Vipusanatana.
Veramani.
Sikapadang.
Samadhyami.
Aren't a precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment.
I undertake the precept to refrain from entertainment, beautification, and adornment.
Uchasayana.
Uchasayana.
Mahasayana.
Mahasayana.
Veramani.
Veramani.
Sikapadang.
Sikapadang.
Samadhyami.
Samadhyami.
I undertake the precept to refrain from lying on a high or luxurious sleeping place. Imani atta sikapadani samadhiyami. Imani atta sikapadani samadhiyami. Imani atta sikapadani samadhiyami. Silena sukatin yanti silena boga sampata silena nipotin yanti tasama silang visotaye. So I don't know what situations you're coming from, but if you're really, really exhausted and you need a lot of sleep, just go for it. Get that over with first, rather than just hitting your floor, hitting your head on the floor here. So sometimes you know, like sleepiness and dullness is a hindrance, but sometimes you're just so exhausted, you really need a good rest. So see, like if you're coming into the meditation and you're just falling over, go and have a good snooze, and take care of that first. Because I know sometimes people come from quite stressful lifestyles and all of that is coming out. So do take care of yourself that way. Otherwise, try to stay to that format. So we start at 5:30 with the morning puja, and use that structure to kind of govern what you're doing. Use that structure and the precept to govern what you're doing. And then within that, what we're doing, as you know, we're just watching the way things are. You know, it's just a movie. And just kind of watch and don't make it a problem, basically. And if you make it a problem, then figure out why you're making a problem, stop making a problem. Right? It's kind of dead easy. So when we come into this and you might feel like really restless, but maybe you've been doing a lot of email stuff and internet stuff and you feel really restless and you want to do something. Well, you don't. But you watch that, right? So that's very important, to accept the fact that when you come into this kind of situation, to some extent it's a relief from the complexity of your life, but also there are no avenues of distraction, or very, very few, so you might feel very, very restless. And Buddha knowing Dharma, taking refuge, is just allowing that restlessness to be there. You know, allowing yourself to feel dissatisfied or restless or uncomfortable. When you come into the shrine room, like the first sitting, you know, it's different. You're used to sitting at home and certain sounds and certain quietness and so on. You're with a group and maybe someone is shifting or maybe it's cold or maybe someone is breathing loud or whatever and you feel, you know, it doesn't feel quite right. Well, how could it feel right? It's different. But if you just allow for that, it just feels different. And rather than making a problem, then mind just accepts it, doesn't it? It's very, very simple things. So the more one just gives up to the situation, and this is the way it is, and just watches any sense of that it should be other, should be otherwise, any resistance to it. So whatever your mind is now bringing up. So like for me, the other day, this terrible kind of strong sense of what we call vibhava tanha. Vibhava tanha is one of the three types of craving. The craving for me is craving not to be the abbot of Tisserna Monastery. Right? Very, very strong. And my mind just wanted to go, you idiot, why did you ever do this? But no. This is what it feels like to not want to be here. And it's not pleasant. It's not pleasant. But what happens if I don't do that? And I just shove it under my mind, oh, I really enjoy being here. That's not going to work. And what if I pursue it, and what am I going to do? Run away? Ridiculous. So no, it just feels this way. And if you just take it on, whatever it comes, just with it, it changes. It does change. And in that capacity to witness friction and difficulty or doubt or fear or fed-upness or whatever, all those very human things that we have, because we live complex lives and we have stress and all that ability just to write this, like Ajahn Sumedho says, I love that line, he says, it all belongs. even that state of mind, it belongs. It's a part of nature. To be fed up is a part of nature. And rather than me like trying to figure it out, just, no, it's this way. And I had to be very diligent with it. And I sat a lot with that. So, I had the good fortune to just really work on that for a few hours that afternoon. But then it's gone. It did change. And these are very simple tools the Buddha gives us. This will change. Right? This will change. And it all belongs, which is what we mean by metta. When we talk about metta bhavana, the practices of loving kindness, they're not just sort of sentimental. You know, it's not about puppy dogs and kittens. That the lamb sleeps with the lion. Actually, the lion eats the lamb. You think about it. But sometimes metta bhavana can sound so very, very sentimental, but it's really what awareness is. Awareness is very large. It has no limits. It has no boundaries. And when you say it all belongs, I'm not indulging in those mind states that are negative. I just say, yeah, it's all right. And then that's where you get a lot of strength. So the sense of awareness being infinite has no boundaries. You know, it's not a structured thing. It accepts all structures. And when we're faced on a retreat, I think, when we're faced with challenging states of mind or states of body or energy things, we have a particularly unique opportunity to learn how to be mindful and aware and accepting with something which is quite complex or difficult or maybe very deeply ingrained. And there's a particularly powerful lesson that can be learned on retreat, because now you really be able to investigate it. Now you can really look and see, okay, yeah, there is this dullness all the time in my practice, or this annoyance in my mind all the time. What is that really like? So you have a chance to get to know it really well, and from that you get insight. You know, just the willingness to embrace whatever comes up in your mind and struggle with it, and so on, and you get like this, just this, I just talk about myself all the time, don't I? But just this difficult state of mind that came up, it really just brought up all the teaching around vibhava tanha, you know, the craving to get rid of, and I could look, feel it in my body, and it really deepened my understanding of the Four Noble Truths. And that would never deepen if I didn't have that difficulty. That's the curious thing. I mean, I don't wish you difficulties. You know, I hope you all just kind of float above your cushion for, you know, hours and hours on end. But probably won't be that way. You know? So to see that our retreat isn't just about having beautiful experiences and you know, lovely Dharma talks and things like that. It's about the nitty-gritty of our minds. And if things like that do arise, then the insights that we get, that's what I always found. When I have difficulties, and I've always had difficulties in meditation, I've never found it easy. Never found monastic life easy, right? I always have difficulties. But it seems to me that's how I get insight into the Four Noble Truths. You know, that's how I get like a lot of strength from those things. So see the value of that and whatever comes up. In terms of techniques and you've all had a lot of experience from what I can see in meditation. So whatever works for you, keep working with that. I'll give a few suggestions, but if they don't work, that's all right. It's the wrong suggestion for you. So have confidence in the things that you have developed. Keep working on them. I don't have a particular theme for the retreat. I never know what I'm going to talk about, but usually it's about suffering and the end of suffering. These are the, you know, that's why we're here. Those are the deep themes. And so my nature is not to accumulate a lot of information, but to deepen the teachings that I do have, you know, to keep deepening them. And so the perspectives that the Buddha offers us intellectually are very beautiful, but we need to really deepen them And so that's what I hope to offer, just the kind of basic perspectives as usual. But how to deepen that, how to make that more profound in your practice. I won't go on too long because I know people are tired, but if you find you can't fall asleep, you know, if and you're just kind of got a lot of energy. If you want to sit, keep sitting here. If you have the energy, don't worry about, oh, I won't get enough sleep tonight. If you've got energy to sit in the evening, keep sitting. And if you miss the morning meeting, we'll still feed you. Don't worry. So like if you got a good run of samadhi, go for it. Go all night if you want. Go for it. And the next day, if you want to sleep, that's fine too. So, you know, if the mind has like some really strength and some stillness and it feels natural to stay with that, just go for it. Right? Go for it. And then if you're wanting to go to sleep and you can't fall asleep, may I recommend using the lying meditation as your posture? And I've been mentioning that the last few years now. Lying meditation is quite foreign to a lot of us. We don't develop it because we tend to fall asleep. But lying meditation is, as you get older, it is a really good posture. Not just for going to sleep. Because my knees, like, I cannot. I used to be able to sit for long, long hours. Meaning I can't do that anymore. But I've developed lying meditation where I can do that for many hours. So my recommendation about lying meditation is to find a lying posture, which is a meditative posture, rather than a falling asleep posture. So the thing about lying down is when we lie down and we want to sleep, we want to basically annihilate consciousness. We just want it all to stop. So what we do is we move the body around into a kind of half fetal posture, whatever way we find comfortable, so we can annihilate consciousness. So do that. Go for it, right? Now, if that's not working and you can't fall asleep, then maybe take the opportunity to use the lying posture as your meditation posture. Right? So don't worry about going to work tomorrow. That's not a problem. So what I suggest is take the corpse posture. Sarvasana, is that right? Is that what you call it? And lay it out. Either put your arms out like that or on your thighs or whatever. Put a small pillow under your knees if you want, so your knees aren't stretched out. And make yourself just as comfortable as you can. Then feel that, then adjust your posture again another 5%. Make it comfortable again. And then set that as your meditation posture. If you're trying to lying part, and that's your meditation posture. Now don't move. So then the first feelings of discomfort you feel, don't move. Use the first feelings of discomfort to establish mindfulness on. Now the pattern that I've seen in my own mind is when I feel, if I want to fall asleep, when I feel discomfort, I try to get out of that discomfort and get more comfortable. Right, that's what we do. So if you're developing meditation in the lying posture, then you take that discomfort and you don't move on it. And you take that discomfort as your object of meditation. It's uncomfortable. It's unpleasant. You want to get rid of it. That's tanha. It's craving. Now you're just letting it become conscious, the discomfort. Sometimes your body will twitch with energy. I find that. It's just twitch. And it'll twitch again. And then after a while, if you're not moving, you settle, the body, you start to have a whole body awareness. Whole body awareness. And the body actually can stay like that for long, long periods of time. So I think it's a very important posture to actually develop. And as I get into my more geriatric stage, I'll probably be talking about it all the time. And we'll all be lying here next to the tree. But seriously, I do recommend it. So if you're having problems falling asleep, use it. I know if you've been walking around all day, it's really hard to just get up and meditate. You just don't want to do that. But you know, take the opportunity and see if you can develop. And don't worry about the morning meditation or whatever. And try to just see what happens. And people tell me, my mind gets all kind of porridge-like. Yeah, it does. The mind just goes into thought. It's not used to being with the body. So you have to bring your awareness down from your brain down into your body. Bring it down into the body, down into the body. I don't know, any yoga teachers here? Oh, no, I suspect yoga, Sarvasana, everyone must just start snoring. I mean, I've never done yoga classes, but I can imagine it's quite like crescendos of snoring or something must go on. But actually, it's quite a difficult posture to develop. Now, otherwise, try to use a chair, use a cushion, do the walking. Try to develop those four postures: sitting, lying, standing, walking. And try to develop that sensitivity. This is a meditation posture now, rather than me just walking back and forth, lying. This is a meditation. So you're setting your mind, you're making the intention for meditation. And that really, really helps you. And then just figure out, how do you do lying meditation? If you want to try it, I'm not saying you have to. If you want to try, how do you do lying meditation? How do we do it? What's the challenges that I have in that way? All right, I'll talk about postural things other time, but I think that's probably plenty for tonight. Let's finish with any questions or anything? Now, in terms of Dharma questions, I don't know if it's been mentioned, but if anyone has questions, if you would write them down and leave them for me on a piece of paper, I guess that's there. Okay, yeah, that's very good. Because I don't want to get into Q&As, because Q&As become very discursive. And I think they stimulate that part of our community where we just kind of get into a lot of talking. So I prefer just bits of paper. Okay.